Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Nicholas Robertson, and I'm an external coordinator at People's Potato, which is a student and worker-run soup kitchen based out of Concordia University in Montreal. We're here on a speaking tour, which has gone across Quebec and Ontario in different cities, called Anarchy at Work. The goal of the tour is to discuss anarchism's relation to the workers' movement. So we started out with the idea of doing this tour, thinking that for too long, North American anarchists seem to have forgotten about the workplace as an area of organizing and an area of struggle within the working class. And we think this is it's a bad idea to ignore those struggles, because the working class workers, for strategic reasons, how their place in society, because of the fact they produce the wealth of society, and just because there are tons and tons of people at work every day, it's a shame that anarchists don't have an influence there. We consider that the working class is the only class in society capable of ending capitalism and destroying the state, and the only class that's also capable of building a libertarian communist future. U.S. anarchists are here, and Jeff, who's from Toronto, to talk about trade unionism and their experience as anarchists in unions. But I'm not in a union, so I'm going to be talking about mostly my experience in a workers' cooperative. Now, many people think that anarchism and the workers' movement have nothing in common, that most anarchists are these bohemian types that like to live on the edge of society in some kind of a marginalized way. But that's far from true. Most anarchists are very ordinary people. All four of us work full-time. Personally, I consider myself a worker before I consider myself an anarchist. Historically, anarchism and the workers' movement have been linked. Let's go by quickly. Like, there's the Russian Revolution before it was hijacked by the Bolshevik Party, and power was centralized into its totalitarian state. Actually, the Russian Revolution was the work of workers' councils and neighborhood councils and consumer councils, which they called Soviets. So basically, a Soviet was a self-managed council, and they were very important in changing Russian society. Sadly, their power was taken from them and centralized into the state by the Bolsheviks. Here in North America, there's the IWW, the International Workers of the World, which aren't specifically anarchists, but are anarchist-influenced, and they have a rich history of struggle. Mostly around the First World War period, there were massive strikes in the U.S. and in Canada, and there were confrontations, armed confrontations with bosses, hired police squads. But to a smaller extent, there are other more recent examples that are worth noting. For example, in Quebec, there was a public sector general strike in 1982, and there was a teachers union that was a big part of that. My father actually was a teacher and was part of that strike, and they drafted this manifesto that is an anarchist, but it was a manifesto for revolutionary syndicalism, saying that it could be possible to negotiate all the time with the government, and that at some point the teachers or workers are going to have to take their own fate into their hands and manage things on their own in a very anarchistic way. So it gives you a bit of a context to what we're trying to get to. Let me talk a bit about my job at the People's Potato. So as I said, we're a soup kitchen run by students and workers. I'm a full-time worker, I'm not a student there. That our basic task is to serve 500 to 800 students with a vegan meal every school day at Concordia University. this was first time to address student poverty at Concordia, because Concordia is known to be one of the most popular universities in Canada, where many working class or poor youth go to school because tuition is cheaper, and also fees, like extra fees there, are pretty much non-existent compared to more ritzy universities like McGill in Montreal. So the People's Potato at Concordia has become so popular amongst the students that the regular cafeteria, which was owned by Chartwell, a multinational, has ceased to operate it because nobody wants to eat there anymore. It's pretty good. I think part of the reason for that was Concordia's strong multi-ethnic character. There's an Arab student population of about 6,000. There are many other people from different nationalities. And really, Chartwell's, with their burger and Coke and fries, wasn't catering to their needs at all. You can imagine if you're of Muslim belief, that's not what you're looking for on your lunch hour. However, when Chartwell's left, well, they didn't entirely leave, that's what I'm trying to explain. They're still doing a few things. Basically, people at the People's Potato thought that Chartwell's as a multinational was a problem, but the people working there weren't. I think that's the good analysis to have in terms of class. Like, the workers aren't the company and they aren't the bosses. So there was a fight to keep the Chartwell's workers' jobs, and it was partially won because out of maybe 30 people that were working there, 20 still have their jobs. And maybe you're wondering what they do, but basically what they do is they cater to the administrators. So university bosses at Concordia still get their Chartwells, but everybody else gets the potato. Our funding is it comes from student fees, and 90% of it does. I think that's a good thing, because the students are the people we're serving, and they're the people we should be responsible to. We don't have any funding from private companies. We do get a few public grants, which are okay. Our structure is, you can call, self-managed. There's no hierarchy in the collective. There's about 20 of us that are employed, 5 or 6 full-time, and about 15 part-time, which are also students. We have potato assemblies every 2 weeks, where people are mandated to take care of certain tasks, and people have the contracts drawn up at the beginning of the year where they have a task description and they're responsible in front of the collective to do those tasks. There's no, as I said, there's no hierarchy, but there is a board that watches over our activity. We have a constitution that sort of paints out the broad picture of what we're supposed to be doing. But I think the board isn't these managing type people that are removed from the organization, that we just brought in from somewhere else. They're students and actually volunteers who come into the kitchen a lot. So their relationship with us is very organic. We see them every day. We talk to them about our work every day. And they meet maybe once every 2 weeks also to do administrative stuff. The social goal of our workers' cooperative is community economic development. So that means, in terms of a food operation, it means getting good, healthy food into the hands of poor and working people that can't normally afford it, because, yeah, healthy food is expensive. We do this project called the Good Food Bag, which is a $5 bag of organic food. I'd estimate that there's like six to eight varieties of fruit and vegetable and grain in the bag. And if you try to buy that same bag of food at a specialty organic shop, it would probably cost $20. And right now we're able to offer that at $5 with the help of local growers, but also distributors that have been nice enough to hand us what we call seconds, food that's just not nice enough to sell, but it's still great to eat. We also do baking. We run a vegan baking operation. We bake nice, really specialty stuff for these ritzy cafes in rich neighborhoods of Montreal, like Westmount, and sell it for really expensive. But and then with the money we get off of that, we do baking at a cheaper rate for cafes just like this one. We also do baking for kids at schools in low-income areas of Montreal where kids are having trouble to eat in the morning. So the money we get from the ruling class people in Westmount, the ruling rich, is then transferred to working class cafes and kids at schools. There's a kind of Robin Hood feel to that that I like a lot. So that gives you a quick summary of what my job is. I'd be glad to answer more questions later if you do. I'd like to have the others speak more about unionism. Just before ending, I'd like to say that our organization, NEFAC, the Anarcho-Communist Federation, we're for like a plurality of workers forms of workers organization. Definitely mainstream unionism is important because that's where majority of workers are at right now, but we encourage like initiatives like Cure the Sleepless Goat or the People's Potato where I work. We also encourage what we call workers resistance groups or like flying squads, that might be called here in Ontario. There's actually one right now in Chicago at a big UPS postal plant where there's a union, but some anarchists and leftists there weren't satisfied with how the union was running. They didn't think it was combative enough, they didn't think it was democratic enough. So they formed this uprise resistance, workers resistance group, and have been trying to fight the boss, but also fight the union in its passivity and try to make it more combative. So that's about it for me. I'll maybe be speaking a bit later and I'm ready to answer questions, but for now, on to Duke, Christine, and Jeff.